If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
The show that takes you home. The Homestretch with Sterling Holmes on ESPN Kansas City. 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, and the ESPN Kansas City Facebook page.
Welcome into the Homestretch, ESPN Kansas City. Give me two claps and a Ric Flair. Woo! You know why?
No.
It's a Briscoe Friday, baby.
Let's go, baby.
Briscoe Friday, legitimately on a Friday. Dylan Michaels behind the glass.
Double woo.
Chiefs have a bye.
Triple woo.
You call this a red bye day?
That's pretty good.
Thanks you. Yeah, I tweeted it and I got four likes, so it can't be that good.
No, it wasn't, but it was okay. You know? It was like a 6.5 or so out of 10. Maybe a 7.
That's what people tell me what I look like. They're like, you're about a 6.5.
Maybe a 7.
Slightly above average,
You could probably shine this thing up to a 7. It's a red bye day here in Kansas City. I like that. I think you got to say it with a little more confidence, really hyphenate it, make that pause known.
I tried. I read bye day. I don't know. That's pretty bad.
Inflection was worse that time.
Yeah, I'm getting worse. It kind of like my radio career. I peaked when I was 6.
That's true. Yeah. I was going to say, look, I don't know that you've peaked yet, but then I remember that you did definitely
peaked at age six.
Uranus on the radio.
Yeah. Which, that's a deep pull.
Great
pull for those who consistently listen to AES, including Almost Entirely Sports with Josh Briscoe, without Josh Briscoe, with Sterling Holmes on ESPN Kansas City. That's a big pull.
Sometimes you've got to reward the longtime listeners with the good stuff. You know, you're right. That is for a narrow audience, but the audience who that is for, those are the diehards. Those are the people who've been around for a minute, who have heard you refuse to pronounce the word Uranus the way your teacher wanted you to pronounce it.
Yeah, in third grade. Yeah.
I mean, it's fantastic. That's
frankly, those 7 listeners who understand that joke.
Yes.
They had a slight chuckle. A slight chuckle.
Or maybe a, do I remember that? I don't know. And then they moved on with the rest of their day.
Sure. I wanted to do something special here.
I want to do something special here.
And speaking of special.
Hello.
This is a special release beer. Yeah, you hear that?
You hear that right there?
So for those of you that don't know, I work with Arrowhead Addict, and I do a podcast over there with me, Matt Connor, Matt Verderam, Patrick Allen.
I love those guys.
Adam Best.
Why are you involved?
Yeah, I know. Frankly, I'm the least talented?
I don't know.
Whatever you want to say.
You made a power rank who I think is most talented in that group?
Yeah, here we go, baby. Let's do this or that, the power rankings. But we had our own beer with Casey Beer Co. It's called the Arrow Red Lager. I'm very excited about this. I've actually had a chance to drink it multiple times already. If you saw a picture of me on Twitter, I crushed a liter of that. It was in a big German glass stein. And you might think, how much is a liter? Well, take a 2-liter and cut it in half,
cut
and there
it
you
in
go.
Half, smart guy.
That's
it's a
lot
Nuremberg
of liquid.
Style red lager, 5.2% ABV.
Yeah.
I'm excited about this.
And then
I feel like the only time for me to drink it is on the home stretch, right?
Yeah,
like,
of course.
I'll just sip it throughout the show, give you my review right out of the gate.
Enjoy yourself.
I'm going to.
You're
going to
enjoy it. If you guys have not tried it, go to Casey Beer Co. and try it and let me know. You can tag me on Twitter at HomestretchKC. It's actually would be very lovely if you guys did that because we want to know how it goes.
Yeah.
Because I'm very proud of this. The first time I took a sip, I literally go, yes. Because you get a little nervous. You get a little nervous.
What if it's not good?
What if it's not good? And we helped brew it. So we were dumping in the stuff, right, to make it legit. And
Sterling also has a bottle opener on his keys that says Sterling on it, like it has his name engraved in it,
okay,
which of course it does.
It's for Sterling the truck, not Sterling, I'm a narcissistic ass.
No, it actually says in really small text underneath there, because I'm a narcissistic ass. Can I crack it open?
Crack it, baby.
Rip it, rip it. Here we go.
It's going to take him 2 times because he's never opened a beer before, apparently. There we go.
I wasn't confident with this Sterling bottle opener.
Yeah, you weren't going to break it.
But I am confident. In this Arrow Red Lager. Let's go. To quote a great radio host, yes. Yeah, it's excellent.
Yeah.
That is fantastic.
See.
So what am I going to have to do to get a second one of these? Do I have to come on again next week?
If you're lucky. If you're lucky. So I went there and
that's wonderful.
Got one of the first times I was back there, I drank it out of the big ass tank. Like I didn't put my mouth to the tank. They got
you
gave
put
me a glass.
Your mouth to
no,
ass tank.
There's a little spigot on the side of these massive, I don't know what you would call them, tanks, I guess.
I'm sure there's a real word for
there's
it.
There's a real word.
Beer people know, but.
And they're sitting here screaming at me. Yelling, you know this. We've told you this.
I'm sipping this bottle. Yeah, I don't know. You should know this.
And I put the beer underneath, and it just came out glorious. And my first sip, I just go, this is it.
It's really good.
In the words of Kenny Loggins, this is it.
No danger zone here.
No.
Flavor zone, more like
yeah.
it.
Boom. It's like a mixture of Kenny Loggins and Flavortown guy.
Guy Fieri?
Guy Fieri. Mm. It's Kenny Loggins meets Guy Fieri.
Highway to the Flavor Zone.
Now, this is what I'm talking about.
Sorry, man. I'm drunk.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised. Does the diabetes, actually, does that make you drunk quicker because you can't break it down? Because that'd be a really good excuse.
No, I'm good.
Like, you can just get blacked out drunk and be like, no, it's the diabetes. I saw you have 23 shots of Jaeger.
Yeah, and there are carbs in that, you know?
And you're like, well, no, before I could have 25 and be fine.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I've had to, you know, have to relearn my limits and everything. So currently 24 shots of Jaeger is what I typically will do on a Thursday.
Mm. Well, I'm glad you enjoy that.
I really am. I was also, I guess, at least a little bit nervous. I wasn't nervous that it wasn't going to be good. I was a little nervous that it wasn't going to be for me.
Sure.
Because, like, I'm not an IPA guy. You know, I've tried to kind of walk over there, and it's just not, it's not my favorite. I would drink 100 of these.
Well, this is why I tried to promote this and make sure, because we had the opportunity to
choose.
Are they
going to make more of it? Can they make more of this and give it to me?
I would hope so,
can
yeah.
Can we make some more of this?
Yeah, I would enjoy that, too.
I'm going to keep the bottle. I'll put, like, a little flower in it or something and remember this beautiful moment for Arrowhead Addict.
But I chose a lager for a reason, because IPAs is not for everyone.
Do you like an IPA?
Yeah, I love IPAs. Hefeweizen's, okay. Which is a wheat beer, is very popular. But I go, what does the majority of people enjoy drinking? What's the most popular beer? It's a lager.
Lagers, right?
Lager. Yeah. So I go, let's make a lager.
You want to be popular, but it's a red lager.
For
so it fits,
Chiefs.
It fits the branding.
Kingdom.
And it's just really nice. I could talk about it in more detail for a while, but I figure we probably will I'm the only one in the world currently tasting this, I think,
in this
moment, including you. So
you're doing a nice job.
I'm really narrow casting, but I'm also really enjoying it.
Yeah. So the Chiefs had the...
Lager was a smart decision.
Thank you. See, I felt proud of myself for doing that,
you did.
By the
way. I'm sorry. I want to come back to this, because this is just talking about you doing good, a good thing.
I don't get this very often from you, so it makes me feel pretty good.
Obviously, Kansas City's got some wheat beers that like have a real hold both in our hearts and in our menus and all of that. But going particularly this red lager route, it is flavorful, but it's smooth. It's enjoyable, but there's enough complexity to it that I'm not going to get bored of it before I hit the bottom of the bottle.
There we go, baby.
The branding is good. The label's nice. I wish it had your face on it. They can do that next time.
Yeah, that'd be great. Just me being a complete buffoon. Me and Verderam just yelling at each other.
Oh, my God. Yeah. If I, yes. The answer to that one is yes. I'll pay for it any price.
Yeah. I want to get into the All-Pro list, because this is the legit one, I guess, now.
Yeah, this is the
AP PFF
All-Pro.
Came, the normal one.
The players are doing their own now.
That was kind of cool.
PFF has theirs. There are other associations that will put out their teams, but the AP All-Pro list is the one that you see on Pro Football Reference when
Correct.
It says All-Pro.
I love it. Matt Connor tagged me in a tweet today that made me laugh. He goes, so Monday was the PFF one, Tuesday was Players Association, today's is the AP, and then tomorrow is going to be Sterling's mom.
Which, we just discussed, basically... She should do one.
She should do one. I feel like she doesn't know. She watches, obviously, all the games, but she doesn't know all the players. She would still be putting, like, so Dante Hall is the punt returner.
Yeah, she'd be right.
Will Shields on the O-line, and
correct.
She's still correct.
Correct.
Somehow Tony Richardson, I feel like, would make
yes.
an appearance.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Tony Richardson, T-Rich, greatest fullback of all time.
She, she
no
has a good...
That doesn't matter. My favorite fullback of all time.
Yeah, mine too.
Great vibes.
I was honestly heartbroken as a child when he left Kansas City. Did he go to the Jets directly after?
I just remember him ending up with the Jets, but I honestly thought, I can't remember if it was before or after with the Chiefs. I just loved Tony Richardson.
Same here.
I was right in that sweet spot of not having to know anything about football to enjoy it because I was a child, and I've always loved the fullback.
I want to point this out. Kansas City really had a fun time for kids growing up, and it was in a different way. Most people remember, like, wide receivers. They'd be like, oh, look at Randy Moss! And then Kansas City Chiefs fans are like,
so right.
Willie Rofe,
yes,
Will Shields,
Brian Waters, Casey Wigman,
and Tony Richardson. Now, this is good football. We were stuck in the I formation.
Left out there? Who's the lineman we left out? Because there was there one rotating spot in that starting five?
Tate.
Yeah.
You're right. Tate would be the fifth that I think we left out. Thank you,
it just makes me laugh because all these other teams are talking about wide receivers and running backs. We had some running backs too, Larry Johnson.
But it's the same conceit. It's fullback run. It's I formation power O-line.
Yeah, like, and we're just sitting here as kids going, we appreciate a good run up the middle.
Yeah, we really did.
And I wonder why this was such a...
That's why Dustin Colquitt's a folk hero. Run, pass, punt, baby. I mean, that was the...
Run, punt, quick kick.
May as well. Yeah, exactly. Dude, that is a really funny observation because... I have talked before about how Kansas City, the greatness we had football-wise was at the running back position for years because I grew up watching Priest Holmes, and then it became Larry Johnson, and then it became Jamal Charles.
Sure, and before then, even Christian Okoye.
Absolutely, Marcus Allen. Like, you got a ton of guys before that, but just, you know, my consciousness started around Priest Holmes. But you're right, you could go back in time, and there are probably a half dozen guys to that position who really, like, made some sort of impact, but... That was the place where there was consistent greatness at the position. The O-line, absolutely. I don't think there are probably that many. I mean, you have maybe, like, Pittsburgh, I feel like, could do some of it. But, like, there are not a lot of NFL cities where some of the most beloved players are an offensive line from the 90s.
And it's really...
Early 2000s, I guess.
Yeah, early 2000s. Yeah. But even, like, Tim Grunard, who's obviously here all the time... Yep. It's wild how much Kansas City respects and appreciates a good offensive line. And take it a step further, we're just going to keep doing this conspiracy theory stuff. I wonder if that's why we have such high expectations for guys like Orlando Brown Jr., because we're used to seeing elite play at offensive line. That's why Eric Fisher, even though he had a really good career, nice career,
very good career,
but he was drafted 1-1, and you expect him to be a Hall of Fame almost level offensive lineman, because we were so used to greatness. Even now, we have Joe Tooney, Creed Humphrey, who, by the way, Creed Humphrey is second team AP all
as
pro.
As is Tooney.
Trey Smith had a really nice year as his second year. But I think it's because we're so used to watching greatness there that you become and you almost expect greatness there.
Yeah, it's also something you kind of hang your hat on, right? It's like, so it's an expectation and almost an identity thing. Like, this Chiefs team's supposed to have a good offensive line. You know, back in my day, back in the good old days, this is what it looked like.
What's funny is a lot of the metrics, too, shows the Chiefs actually having a really good offensive line even this year, right?
Yep.
But it's not the offensive line that a lot of us here grew up with, and so it looks even worse than it is. And look at us having a revelation here.
No, this is good. I like this a lot. We talked about the Eric Fisher thing literally on the Zone today. I don't remember how it came up. We're talking about Chris Jones, and like, hey, it doesn't look like people like Chris Jones as much as they should here. I don't know what's going on there. But like Eric Fisher was another example of, I think he just was damned by his draft position, which isn't his fault. He ended up having a really nice career. Then Mitchell Schwartz shows up, and he's the best tackle on the team from the right side. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I love that Kansas City is an offensive line city. I think that's amazing. But also, it is definitely indicative of what we were grasping for things to be proud of from this football team.
Sure.
Because oftentimes that was sort of it. Real blue-collar vibe, absolutely.
Barbecue, beer.
And also, though, like, if I'm being honest,
boys.
You know, Patrick Mahomes to Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce also was pretty good. So, but now we got Isaiah Pacheco.
Yeah.
The Larry Johnson of our era.
They're just keeping...
I don't know if that's true.
That's not bad, though. That's not a bad
places.
Comp.
I hope it's not.
Yeah, well, sure. But it's
fun places.
We're just saying football field. Don't even take in the contract situation stuff either.
No, straight up. This is
running style.
This is just free association that we're doing. It's just like Isaiah Pacheco, and I really did go, well, I'm not going to compare him to Jamal Charles because I'm not going to do that for any human being.
Yeah.
He's not really a Priest Holmes type. I can make him Larry Johnson.
Yeah.
You can figure it out.
Yeah, there we go.
It's Casey Beard's great.
He's Roger Craig. If we're going outside the Chiefs spectrum, if you watch Roger Craig high knees style.
Yeah.
That's like his
I'm going to have to watch it. But I trust Dylan's free association present player to player from history more than anyone else in my life.
Yeah, I really trust Dylan with his stuff.
Dylan grinds the tape, and by the tape, I mean America's Game, every Football Life. All of those. I've had many conversations with Dylan about the depths of the NFL archives that he has gotten into.
By the way, Ryan on the chat says, thank you for listening, by the way.
Hi, Ryan.
Fisher got called for holding a lot in inopportune times. I agree, and that also might be part association why you have this, I don't want to say disdain or distaste for Eric Fisher, but he was so solid for so long, and you did have some of those inopportune holds. The most blatant.
Is this just the James Harrison one? Is that what we're talking about?
For me, the Steelers one always gets me.
Sure.
It was clear holding. It was not effective in the play at all.
Sure.
But I do think that's obviously
like bleep happens.
One of your memories. Same thing with D Ford. Similar instance here. D Ford had a really nice career for Kansas City.
Yep.
Short.
Yep.
But that one play is always going to overshadow all the contributions. Eric Fisher's a little different because he had more longevity here.
Yeah, he also caught a touchdown and dumped beer on his face, and that's never the first thing people remember.
Don't dump that beer.
I won't. I
don't
would never.
You spill
I'm going to dump it into my mouth is what I'm going to do. I just, that kind of stuff, and no shot at Ryan because I get it, but like, it's what ends up really ruining how we remember players who don't win, in particular. Eric Fisher got a ring, right? Right, yeah, we're together on this one. Yeah, he was hurt because he was hurt in the second round.
He was injured. Yeah.
I was like, "Wait, hold on." The silence there hesitated myself and you and all of us.
Deafening.
He got a ring, and then it was a couple AFC championships because his Achilles was torn late in the AFC championship game.
Yep.
Even as a guy who did win, his career I think is more associated with the pre-Mahomes era, and you remember the more negative things because, and I maybe this is just me and I'm projecting on other people. But like, if you say Sammy Watkins, word association for Chiefs fans, if your first thought is hamstring, unavailable, didn't know when he was going to play, like, I just feel like you're remembering the. I want to fix your memories for you because my memories of Sammy Watkins are playoff touchdowns and huge plays moving the sticks.
Correct,
like,
yeah,
that's I have really positive feelings towards Sammy Watkins.
I do too,
because he's associated with really positive feelings around the team in a very direct way. So I think most Chiefs fans will have mostly positive thoughts about Sammy Watkins.
Sure,
you can have the way you couch it or whatever. But like, D Ford's last real memory in Kansas City is, it's not even. He didn't take his helmet off and smack Tom Brady with it. He was offsides.
Yeah.
I don't like remembering a player from a mistake or two,
correct,
even with D4, like when it's unavoidable at this point.
I do think it's interesting, and I never tell anyone how to fan.
You know who needs to hire Josh is Bill Buckner. We'll let him do the PR for Bill Buckner as well.
And that's the thing is like whenever your career is defined by the worst single moment, the rest of the career just doesn't really factor into the equation. So I understand how and why that happens specifically for fans who are really emotionally invested in that moment.
Sure.
But I wish it wasn't the case because it would be, we don't do that the other way around. I guess we do sometimes, but like David Tyree will be a legend forever because he has a moment that we all remember because it was a total outlier.
Well, it's
so the rest
all
of his,
sports,
the rest
though.
Of his career being like kind of underwhelming doesn't matter. He's a Super Bowl legend.
Correct.
So that just that way that entire careers and legacies hinge on individual plays. It's fundamental to sports. It happens all the time.
I mean, think
I'm
of
not
Aaron Rowan.
Happen.
Aaron Rowan had a very nice career in baseball, but what do you remember him for? Busting his nose in center field, making the diving catch, right? That's what you remember Aaron Rowan for. You remember him for, I think he also saved a perfect game as well.
I don't remember Aaron Rowan, so.
With Mark Burley, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I'm not an Aaron Rowan aficionado.
Yeah, this is you v. you here, Stu.
This is me versus me.
Let me hang on. Let's check the tape here.
Let's check the tapes, too.
Or the dude for the White Sox who also made, I think it was again Mark Burley, the game-saving diving catch in center field. Like, you remember these certain players for certain things, and you forget about what they did as a whole, and that's what we've done with some players. And by the way,
where do you remember Jerod Dyson? Like, in a moment.
I remember him getting up, stealing a base.
I remember him on second base doing that with his hands.
Yeah.
Sterling is correct. Sorry to interrupt.
No, you're good.
Absolutely correct.
Thank you.
What was Jerod Dyson's?
With wall, holds on for catch. Let's see.
Look up Jerod Dyson's slash line for me, Sterling.
Well, we know what Gerard, but no one expected Gerard Dyson to be.
I'm using it as a positive example.
Okay.
Because I was going to say we don't really do it in the inverse, but sometimes we do. Gerard Dyson's career as a Royal is not that interesting. But the huge moments where he did succeed, he will be remembered here rightfully as a legend forever.
By the way, he hit 21 home runs, which feels way higher than I would have guessed.
Yeah.
He also hit 7 in one season for Arizona when he was 34. So good for him. That's a late career power surge.
It's hotter down there, and the balls.
Oh, that might have.
I don't think that really makes sense.
I think that's before they added the humidifier. Because when did they add the humidifier? Was that 2020?
I have no idea. Yeah. That sounds about right.
Yeah.
But like, what did Gerard Dyson? What was his average as a Royal? Did he give me his,
I just have the. I'll give the overall OPS.
Sure.
For him. It was 645 OPS plus of 75, so 100's average. So he was 25% average as a hitter. He did have 266 stolen bases, which obviously was his calling card.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he was very good defensively.
Yeah, yeah. And this is not to bleep on Gerard Dyson.
I will say this: he had 15.3 WAR, wins above replacement, for his career.
Surprising,
being
high.
A 25% below average hitter.
Yeah, that's sort of.
That's
weird.
Very impressive.
Yeah. So again, like I asked about him in particular because the gif of him on second doing the motorcycle revving is how we remember him, and that's awesome. It's the coolest thing about sports, or one of the coolest things about sports, is that you do have these individual snapshot moments where guys will live on forever because of how they performed in that moment. I just wish it wasn't true in the inverse as well, where a really good career is undercut by like a couple of holding penalties against Derek Fisher.
Yeah.
Thanks for the comment, Ryan, because I ended up sparking an entire conversation
that was
I didn't know
fun.
I had in me. So.
Yeah, that was cool.
That is kind of interesting.
And again, I will always also say, I never tell fans how to fan because...
I'll tell fans how to fan. I don't mind.
I won't, because you know why?
But I will.
No, I know, but for me, that's part of being a fan.
You can be a bad fan, though.
I might disagree with someone something that someone says, but it's also one of those things where it's like, that's your right to say it, man.
Don't throw bottles at players.
Okay.
All right, I gave you a way to fan.
That one's fair. I'm talking about when you have a certain feeling towards a player. I will always say that is your opinion. I hopefully we might not agree on something.
Don't use that negative feeling to tweet at a player and to tell them that their whole family's ugly.
Yes, that one's
okay.
True.
All right.
Tony Gonzalez is the one that always comes to mind.
Yeah. I'll tell fans how to fan on this one.
I understand why people have a certain feeling towards Tony Gonzalez the way he left Kansas City. I understand in his comments in Atlanta, this, that, and the other. But I think a lot of it was taken out of context. I think a lot of it was, what is he going to say? Because he's in Atlanta now.
Yep.
I have no ill feelings towards Tony Gonzalez for the example of, I want to remember him of doing all the incredible great things he did in Kansas City. I want to claim him as part of Chiefs Kingdom
and
not put
him
in as a Falcon. Because what was the majority of his career accolades? What team was he a part of?
He was a Chief.
He was a Chief.
If your memory of Tony, and here's the thing, and this, I guess, I don't know if I'm telling you how to fan or not, but I'm offering you a different path. If your strongest memory of Tony Gonzalez is him standing in a scrum around Atlanta media reporters saying nice things about the Falcons and not him dunking the football over the crossbar, I'm not telling you you're fanning wrong. I'm telling you, you lost the plot. Like, you lost the good stuff about being a fan, and you only kept the, like, angry, vitriolic stuff. I just don't want to live that way. That just doesn't do any good for me.
And speaking of...
Plus, how would the Chiefs have won all the Super Bowls if it wasn't for Javier Arenas? Like...
Okay, by the way...
He was the pick they got back, right?
Javier Arenas, and I thought he was going to be an absolute stud.
Second-round pick, man. I mean,
stud. And then he was traded for Anthony Sherman, correct?
Wow, yeah, I think he was, because he definitely ended up in Arizona.
That was, I think, the move. Again, Chiefs in their fullback. Anthony Sherman, Michael Burton, Tony Richardson. Chiefs need more I formation, is all I'm saying. Get Patrick Mahomes under center and run more I formation, weak, strong. I'm all for the fullback. Dylan, I know Dylan's a big fullback guy.
Okay, so Javier Arenas. I'm on the Football Reference page. I'm trying to get to the... like transaction log, because it usually shows trades. Here we go. Well, this isn't going to give him the credit for the draft pick trade, but May 1st, 2013, straight up, traded by Chiefs to Cardinals for Anthony Sherman.
You don't get that very often. A nice cornerback slash what, special teams specialist?
Corner to full trade on the back department is a weird one.
That's a pretty incredible one. By the way, just Antonio Gonzalez, I want to chase him.
He's also drafted a fullback at some point in that. Was it a K-Stater or
it was
a BYU
It was the same year, and they cut the fullback.
The rookie didn't make it, and Sherman
did.
All right, I'm going to get that name at some point.
No, really quick, though.
Yeah, show me what's
what look at this. I know it's not really as fun because I'm showing Briscoe a video over an audio medium.
I'll try to do play-by-play.
But we were talking about Tony Gonzalez here, and I just got to show you this bad boy. Look at that.
Prank. I've seen this.
Yeah.
It's Sterling Holmes in a Brian Waters jersey.
No, that is a Nick Bolton rookie edition jersey.
I was trying to do you a favor.
No, it's a rookie edition. That's what we're calling him.
I was trying to do you a favor.
A Brian Waters jersey is actually pretty sweet.
If I see someone out here with a 54 Waters, I'm high-fiving that person.
Yeah, that guy's tight. Or person, or lady.
Yeah.
Yeah, that
Brian Waters super fan is tight. We're going to remember rookie fullback here before we take a break.
The video, yeah, we're going to take a break shortly.
We cannot break until I get you the name of this fullback.
The video, though, was me doing a Tony Gonzalez in cowboy boots.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
You didn't put that in there.
No, and you didn't do a Tony Gonzalez.
I didn't get over
the crossbar.
I got the crossbar, okay? As a 5'10 dude in cowboy boots who did not stretch beforehand.
That's on you.
That's 10 feet. Throwing that out there. That's called ups.
It was, in fact, a wildcat in the sixth round of the 2013 NFL draft with the 204th overall pick. Three picks before they drafted Mike Catapano, who did play for a little bit.
Oh, yeah, baby.
They selected Braden Wilson, fullback, out of Kansas State. That's kind of a bummer. I don't think he ever played for anybody.
Wow. Way to just limp into break for us. Thanks, Briscoe.
I hope he's doing well.
Deuce Vaughn to KC?
I'd spend a sixth on him or something. I legit don't know what the range is.
We're almost done with Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Why are we going to do it again?
No,
I'm not saying a first, Dylan.
Yeah, we're not saying a first.
I know.
Student,
I'm just saying, like,
I would say McKinnon. What's the difference between a first and a fifth round draft pick?
I'm
Dylan?
Saying at the end
There's
of the
a
day,
lot.
Whether is Deuce Vaughn
Dylan
head and shoulders or even or
well, he's
worse.
Head and shoulders below most people, but that's
no,
just
I'm
because
saying,
he's not very tall.
As far as talent, to Clyde.
I think that Andy Reid would find some really fun ways to
use
Deuce Vaughn, and so when we're in the who did they have a sixth round running back a few years ago? Also, I just closed the draft class page.
Oh,
but
yes.
Certainly once we're in the Isaiah Pacheco, Darwin Thompson range. I would, and maybe even a tiny bit sooner. I would be very interested in Deuce Vaughn from an explosive standpoint, and especially for the future of a post Jerick McKinnon world point.
That because I think he would become the next Jerick McKinnon. And by the way, you're talking to two dudes who basically are running backs don't matter, and we're hyping up a running back. That's how
hyping is strong. I said a sixth round pick.
Okay,
but
I would go fifth.
I
you know
find
what?
Him to be a very fun player.
Bleep it. I would go fifth. Give me a fifth for the deuces loose. Just so we can write that on a sign.
Look, here's the thing. I can tell you with confidence, it would not be my least favorite running back draft pick the Chiefs have made.
Strong.
You're welcome.
Strong. With that, just extremely hot take, we'll take a quick break, come back, talk more Chiefs after this home stretch, ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back to the home stretch, ESPN Kansas City. Don't feel left out. You're always welcome with Briscoe and Sterling.
It's 3:31 p.m. right now. You know where we're at in the show at the moment?
Second segment.
The middle.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Thank you.
I saw them in concert, a couple months ago, and they were outstanding still. I love Jimmy Eat World. I think when they retire, they should become Jimmy Eat World.
Can you mute your phone, please?
Yeah,
on the radio show here.
What's hilarious was this somehow was muted, and I must have unmuted it in the break just out of...
Are you going to get a case for your phone?
No. So I just got a new phone.
You just got a new phone. I got a glass protector
on
mine and stuff.
Because
green's
my favorite color.
I like the green. The emerald green is nice.
And that's why I'm not getting a cover, because I love it. And I'm paying for Apple what's it, Apple Care?
Yeah.
So if I break it, it's like $30 to replace it, and I go, well, that's...
It does feel so good. It feels so good. Yeah. So here's my conundrum, okay? I've gone the other way with my phone, and I need some guidance here. So I got a MagSafe case or whatever, but I don't really use the MagSafe stuff. Because, and you can tell if you just see the little side-by-side, right now my phone is thick and your phone is sleek. But I went for the pop socket wallet and a little pop socket on it. I'm a big pop socket guy. I might eventually stop doing that. But I have all of my stuff, like my mandatory cards, all fit here, right attached to the back of my phone. Not folding out in the wallet way, but just clipped onto the back.
Yeah.
It's really convenient. I can leave the house with just this. And my insulin phone, which so I guess not really just this. But I can theoretically leave my house with just this. It's nice, but it might be nicer to just have a nice, thin phone.
Oh, got to give a shout out here to ex-pro wrestler Pat Rose. Says he loves Kansas City, y'all, and he's in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Thank you, Pat, for listening to the show.
In your honor, I'm going to choke slam Sterling during the break.
That wouldn't be... That's like a normal... segment we do.
I don't think I've ever been physically violent with you.
I don't believe so.
I don't think I have been.
We don't really have an HR department here, so it's frankly we probably could do some.
It's Todd Lebo with like a stick on mustache.
Yeah, and frankly, that's more alarming than anything else.
Mustache is actually the upsetting part.
Yeah, that's the most upsetting part. Okay, I actually wanted to ask you a question. I've been getting a lot of traction on Twitter with, and I want to get your thoughts here. Who was the most underrated or unsung player for the Kansas City Chiefs this year? Someone who's not talked about enough. So, for example, in my opinion, it can't be Jerick McKinnon. I know it's a popular answer because he won December Offensive Player of the Month, right? Yes. So, like, it can't be, for example, I think L'Jarius Sneed is too talked about enough.
That was going to be my like objectionable one.
Maybe he should be an All-Pro.
Nationally, I don't think he gets enough attention, but locally he probably does.
And I think Nick Bolton also gets enough love.
That would be a bad answer anyway. That would be a bad answer.
Oh. Way to ruin this segment.
Nick, let me tell you that here's what I'm going to say.
No, we're doing positives right now. We're doing positives.
Nick Bolton gets plenty of credit. That's the only way. That's all I'm going to say is Nick Bolton gets plenty of credit.
M-I-Z. All right, so let's talk about yours. Mine was Mike Dana.
Yeah.
Mike Dana had the second highest pass rush win rate. Very difficult to pronounce and say.
It is hard.
Second highest outside of Chris Jones.
Yeah.
He doesn't play a ton. He had less pressures than a lot of guys on the team, including Frank Clark, because of the limited amount of snaps. Mm-hmm. But Mike Dana's versatility in NASCAR packages, he's playing on the interior, right? Mm-hmm. When Spags uses that, and I think it's very impressive, his versatility. He's not the most athletic guy. We knew that. When he was drafted, I always say, why did they draft him? Because they drafted him in the fifth round, and he was projected to go undrafted. And I'm sitting, what a reach for a guy who doesn't have great reach.
Exactly, absolutely.
But Mike Dana has that motor. He has something about him. He never gives up. He's gotten the most, just squeezed all the talent he possibly can out of himself.
Yep.
And he's done a very nice job. I think he's very underrated, and he's an unsung part of what was, going into the season, a very young, for the most part, inexperienced, or at least question marks about the experienced guys, and Frank Clark and Chris Jones.
Mm-hmm.
He's been a glue guy. I think Mike Dana is underrated. Who do you have?
It's funny because I think it matters where you're answering the question. Because if someone asked me this on a national show, right, to say, hey, so you know we're following some of the big stars, but like who's the unsung hero of this team? At first, I would try Chris Jones because I still feel like he's a first team All Pro, and I'm not sure he's gotten enough credit for all of that. My national answer would probably be Trent McDuffie. I want people to realize how good he's been despite missing all those games and not being targeted very often. So Trent McDuffie is probably my answer. If I'm getting to pick a guy who's like an everyday starter now, Mike Dana, as far as a rotational guy who's not in the starting lineup, is a very good answer. I think you could also make that argument. Here's my spicy one for Frank Clark.
Mm.
I think Frank Clark might be one of those guys as like there's a phrase, like post-hype sleeper or something like that.
Sure.
So I like all of those. But it just depends on how granular you want to get. Like, I think Noah Gray kind of matters.
Yeah.
But I don't think that he matters as much as Trent McDuffie.
Sure.
So, I can't be anyone on the offensive line because we talk about all of them all the time.
Even Trey Smith. I've seen a lot of Trey Smith. Trey Smith legitimately has a T-shirt. There's not many and again, maybe this goes back to our Kansas City love for offensive linemen, but when you have an offensive lineman who's not the highest paid left guard, one of the higher paid left guards in the NFL, who's typically an all-pro, at least this year's second team, Creed Humphrey, who's second team all-pro, it's not Orlando Brown Jr., who is a obviously big name, but it's your, what, fourth most famous offensive lineman?
Right.
And he has a T-shirt.
He has a T-shirt. He's out here making pancakes.
I mean, that's the appreciation Kansas City has for O-linemen.
Yeah, and it also, to expand that even more on like the underrated side, there just aren't a lot of viable options within the, again, if you're doing it for amongst Chiefs fans, and it's why like Mike Dana's almost the only answer that I'm going through, like all both sides of the ball, because we know the entire offensive line. For a while, it was Mecole Hardman. He would have been my answer until he got hurt. He was underrated for the impact he was having. But he's been hurt, so I can't really pick him anymore. I can't say Kadarius Toney because we're all watching. We all see that. I have like a vague argument for Marquez Valdez-Scantling.
I would listen to it.
Just in terms of what he is forcing defenses to do with his presence out there. Nate Taylor made the point to me at one point. Say, look at all these Chiefs touchdowns, a little more downfield passes, and look and see where MVS is. And he is frequently affecting the coverage. But that is like... That's just because I think most Chiefs fans are pretty low on MVS right now, and I think that's a little bit unfair. But we have dissected this team so minutely that Justin Watson is an unacceptable answer. he is properly rated at this point. So I like Dana, Dunlap and Frank Clark are both really good. I think I would really plant my flag on Trent McDuffie because I do think that even amongst Chiefs fans, we're just not really talking about him much, and therefore he's underrated because of that.
Yeah. I do think it's kind of funny because we do talk about every single Chiefs player after every single game. That's what we
do. Unless they're playing well, which is Orlando Brown's story these last four or 5 weeks.
Well, I've been trying to, by the way, for a while now.
It's hard to get a mob when everyone's pleased.
When you've already found the scapegoat, or even if you just want to say, if you already found a certain opinion about a guy, it's very difficult to change. It's in everything. It's difficult, right? You're stuck in your ways, and I know I can be part of that myself.
Sure.
So
we can all be stubborn about our takes.
Sure. Because
did you get any other answers that you really liked? I'm still thinking. Like,
I saw a couple of Noah Grays I liked.
Brian Cook has a real role
I
in this defense.
I saw a few Brian
but he
Cook.
Hasn't been underrated. He's just been getting more work now, and he's playing good football. So I don't know.
I saw a few people like Deion Bush on special teams, which I thought was pretty interesting.
Do you know who's been underrated this year? Justin Reed. There's my actual answer.
I got a couple Justin Reeds.
Which is, again, hard because he's
Turk Wharton and Colin Saunders got some as well.
Sure, but again, Wharton's been hurt he got hurt early in the season. And then I think the argument for Saunders is very similar to Dana, where my only counterpoint is that, and this is both a compliment and a little bit of an undercutting, I guess, those guys are there to take advantage of what Chris Jones makes for them.
Yeah.
Which is fine. You have to have guys who do take advantage of that. That's George Karloftis. That's Mike Dana. That's Colin Saunders. That's the best of Frank Clark and Carlos Dunlap. When everybody else is getting one-on-ones because Chris Jones has 9 guys paying attention to him, you need to be able to win those matchups. So, like, that's the job. But I also don't know. Like, I literally just think you and I could sit here and we could go too deep at every position on this team.
Correct.
And it wouldn't be weird because we do talk about Mike Dana.
I would also say I saw some for Carlos Dunlap, but I know he gets some talk. But I think that was a really good one, and also one that I was considering putting was Dunlap. Because
I went Clark over Dunlap just from previous expectations.
The reason why I'm going with Dunlap was because I actually had lower expectations for Dunlap. I didn't think he was going to do much at all this year. I thought he was over the hill, and he's been much better than even Melvin Ingram, who had an impact to an extent last season.
Melvin Ingram absolutely had an impact last season.
Yeah.
Melvin Ingram was the best edge rusher on the team last year.
But that was also for a little bit of issue, too.
Yeah.
Carlos Dunlap does a lot of things that don't show up on a box score. When he was playing, I always go back to this game in particular, Russell Wilson in the first half of the Broncos last game, they, of course, Hackett's out. What does Russell Wilson do? Tried to extend plays. So I don't know if that was a Hackett situation or a Russell Wilson situation, but there was a lot more bootlegs rolling him out. And what did Dunlap do? He stayed in the passing lane. He didn't just immediately put his ears back and try and sack Russell Wilson. Maybe he gets there once or twice, but what happens the other times? Russell Wilson blows by him. Carlos Dunlap just kept his, like a basketball player, like Dikembe Mutombo, getting in a stance, sliding with him, using the long arms to affect the ball and forced a lot of throwaways.
Yep.
And that does not show up in the box score, but it was something I noticed and I want to give him some credit for. So I think Dunlap is a good answer in my mind.
I just thought he would, I honestly, I kind of just checked him off the list because I figured he was at least close to getting the credit he deserves. Again, at least here in Kansas City.
Sure.
I did a hit in a sports map radio a couple of nights ago. And again, like the conversation there is, do you know how good Chris Jones is?
Yeah.
Do you know what Kadarius Toney is going to do in the playoffs?
Yeah.
Do you know where the rookie class is at?
Sure.
We talked about that rookie class for 3 months before they ever played a snap.
Yeah.
So it's
what we
we're
do.
We're really saturated in it. Finding that one dry spot is difficult.
And
you're
Mike
in
Dana,
Chiefs.
Congratulations. Come
and,
on
yeah,
down.
And it's a good answer. It is still a good answer. He is still underrated. And he could, and if I was his agent, should try to stay a Chief for a lifetime.
Yeah.
Because I think his role is a part of the equation here. Right? I don't think they could just find any dude off the street to play Mike Dana's role. But I also don't think that Mike Dana could necessarily go to some other team and find a bigger role.
Yeah,
like,
he's not going
spot.
To San Fran or the Chargers, and all of a sudden he's one of the guys.
Or even to a crappy team where he's starting. I don't know that that's good for his value, because you need to be in positions to succeed. But that's a team sport. Like, I hope that doesn't come off as like a backhanded compliment.
Yeah.
Because it goes back to the Chris Jones thing. Part of a team unit as a pass rush is taking advantage of what the other parts of the matchup are creating at any given snap.
Yeah. I want to bring up something not Chief-related, but AFC West-related.
Sure. I'm going to have a quick swig of my Arrow Red Lager.
Mike Williams has a back fracture, which, by the way, that sounds horrible.
Really bad. This is what Bane did to Batman. He was out way more than 3 weeks.
Yeah, so it says 2 to 3 weeks with fracture in back. So most likely, he's done for the year.
Yeah.
We don't think the Chargers are going to make the Super Bowl, and even if so, he might still be out.
Yeah.
This has to go down as one of the most asinine decisions I have seen from a head coach. And I know we talk about poor coaching decisions, mostly it's in-game decisions. But this is a situation where you have a wide receiver, one of the best wide receivers on your team, if not wide receiver one, wide receiver two, because Keenan Allen's obviously very talented.
The second most important weapon in your offense.
And
or a top two weapon.
Not only do you play him, he's had injuries in the past.
Yep.
You then double down post-game by saying, well, we only have 48 guys, or 46 guys.
He quadrupled down. You know when he doubled down? When Chase Daniel was out there throwing passes to Keenan Allen.
Yeah.
It showed that you realized what was going on, and he's out there throwing passes to 50-year-old Keenan Allen? Are you kidding me? I don't... Totally, totally mind-boggling.
And then just when you say that after the game, and you had questions going in, going, why do you only have 4 active wide receivers on game day?
Yeah.
And this is why.
And when their inactives came out, they didn't know the game was meaningless. When the game started, they did.
Yes.
Standard elevation, my guy. Like, just go ahead and pre-plan for the possibility of that, so you don't have to have injury-prone, aging Keenan Allen and Mike Williams out there the week before the playoffs in the game that you cannot affect at all today.
And
from a coach who doesn't play his guys in the preseason.
And Bosa got injured, by the way. He should be healthy for this upcoming game. But the fact of the matter that he even went off with anything,
yeah,
mind blowing.
Yeah, I mean, what do those guys have to prove too? Like, what are you looking for out of those guys that they haven't proven in their career and in that season?
They've played really well. The Chargers were finally getting healthy. They were finally getting healthy. Rashawn Slater supposed to miss this week, but potentially back the following. So you're sitting here, Derwin James back. So you're sitting here like, okay, finally the Chargers are getting some of their star power.
Do you guys remember? I legit don't remember what time in the game Mike Williams got hurt.
I don't remember off the top of my head.
I don't remember either.
First half, I think.
I don't
because
remember.
At that point, so anyway,
I think
I don't
it
remember
was
either.
First half.
I think it was first half. So here, let me do like a very slight devil's advocate, and then I'm going to slay the devil. Slight devil's advocate. If you say, hey, look, we've been preparing all week to play this like a real game because we thought there was a chance that it could matter. So our guys have been prepping for this. They warmed up for this. They are in game day mode. I'm going to send them out there. I'm going to give both sides of the ball one or two drives, and then I'm going to get those guys out, and we're going to get the backup some run. If that was the argument, I would say, man, I don't love it. It's deeply unfortunate, but okay. I have some evidence that you had a plan, and it backfired in a really unfortunate manner. But that's not what it was. Herbert was out there into the fourth quarter late.
Yeah.
They lost the game to the Broncos anyway.
They still lost, which is incredible.
Unbelievable. And even at the moment of, oh God, Mike Williams is getting carted away here, that wasn't even a big flashing sign of, oh, you know what, we got to stop bleeping around here, make sure our guys get out of here healthy. It There have been parts of Brandon Staley's tenure that I have thought, hey, you know what? He's doing some forward-thinking things. There is a future here. He's a really good defensive coordinator. He got that job because of it, and he'll be a good defensive coordinator again in a year or two when he gets fired in L.A. But for that to be, it was just one of the most jarring, he just figured out he's not built for this kind of moments.
Yeah.
And again, Nathaniel Hackett had 15 of those, and they started in week one, so that became a real, that hurricane started swirling pretty early. And Staley's had a handful of them. But this one just has, to Dylan's question, what are you looking to see? What do they have to prove? What do you expect this is going to add? Why don't you play your guys for a quarter in the preseason if you do think that playing is going to benefit them? And also, I'm going to extend it even beyond Brandon Staley. If they couldn't end up figuring out a way to have enough wide receivers for the possibility to where Chase Daniels went out there at the end of a meaningless game throwing the ball to Keenan Allen, that is also a reflection on the entire organization. The GM and an owner who could say, do we need to do our guys like this? Every element of that failed, and coaches below Brandon Staley failed. Nobody went, hey, man, can we get our guys out of here? I mean, it is an organizational disaster. And has totally changed the tenor of this game on Saturday. They play tomorrow, right?
Yeah, they play tomorrow. It's just, it's incredible.
So frustrating.
And this is one of those ones where I've been, I don't want to say a Staley supporter, but I've understood some of his moves that were questioned at the time or post. The game against the Kansas City Chiefs where they lost, when they went for it on a ton of fourth downs. I see her going, yeah, well, the tight end didn't knock himself out. You're not having the same conversation.
And there was a consistency in the two Chiefs-Chargers games. They basically swapped.
They did swap. And I go, I can see what he was doing.
Right.
But this one? There's no seeing what he was doing. There was no redeeming qualities.
Right.
No, nothing you can take your half and say, yeah, well, I understand.
Yeah, right.
No,
you can't even see the vision. You can't even see the plan, the best case scenario. Playing 60 minutes and staying healthy, you're still getting hit like crazy. Yeah.
It's just, you know what?
And your guys have all been hurt.
Tell you what, I'm glad Andy Reid is the head coach of the Kansas City Chiefs, which again, I wanted to point out, we got to take a break right now.
My only concern is that I wonder how many NFL head coaches would do basically the same thing. I don't know.
I don't want to take a break. Before we do, I just want to point out, this is again why I think Andy Reid should have gotten at least some consideration for head coach of the year.
If your team stunk the year before, yeah, but for whatever reason.
I get it. It's 14-3. He exceeded expectations. Vegas had him as 10.5 wins. They won 14. First place in the AFC West. No Tyreek Hill. The Chiefs did everything, starting all new pieces, all this youth pieces. Juju Smith-Schuster new. MVS new. Sky Moore new. Kadarius Toney new. Mecole Hardman was banged up most of the year. Justin Watson new. And they still dominate, having the number one offense in the NFL. It is incredible. We'll take a quick break.
Good takes,
come back, this or that with Briscoe after this home stretch, ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back to the home stretch, this or that with Briscoe.
I just polished off my Arrow Red Lager. Feel great.
Feel good?
I loved it.
Good. Would you rather face the Chargers or the Jags? That's the most likely scenario that's going to happen.
Absolutely.
I'm not going to say, no, we'd play Skylar Thompson, Miami. Yeah, it's not going to happen.
That would be ideal, guys.
Come
on. I think it's still the Jags, but it's becoming narrower and narrower by the moment. The Chargers have a different level against the Chiefs, but part of that level is usually Mike Williams, and he's not going to be there now. So it's the Jags, but more narrowly than it was a couple hours ago.
Who did better turning a dumpster fire into a playoff team? Brian Daboll and the Giants, Doug Peterson, and the Jags.
I'm going to give it to Brian Daboll because he doesn't have Trevor Lawrence. It looked worse in Jacksonville than it was because Urban Meyer was so bad. It looked as bad as it was in New York because it was bad. And I really admire how they've built that staff out.
Yeah. Who would you rather face? Bengals at home or Bills at a neutral site? You knew this was coming.
Oh, that's a good question.
You knew it was coming.
I didn't know it was coming. I personally would like the game to be at Arrowhead, and I personally am not playing in it. But for the Chiefs to get to the Super Bowl, Bills in Atlanta.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
I think the Bengals are playing the best football in the NFL right now. The Bills have a lot of question marks. Von Miller is a massive loss. Tre'Davious White's not playing like the all-pro he was coming
Micah
back from
Hyde
injury.
Could be back.
Micah Hyde could be back, but after we saw what happened to Tre'Davious White, it's not just a, oh, yeah, Micah Hyde's back, now he's an all-pro. It's, okay, what's he going to look like?
Absolutely.
Josh Allen, as good as he's been, he still makes boneheaded plays every once in a while, and I don't know, it's the elbow and the injury, whatever have you. He's not as consistent as Joe Burrow, which, again, my Joe Burrow is Drew Brees 2.0 take.
Yeah.
Looking pretty damn good.
Looking frisky.
What was your worst take of the year? We did a show yesterday
where
we did our worst take. We picked up some of mine where Clyde Edwards-Helaire was going to be the legitimate RB1 on this team.
Yeah, I didn't have that.
That was a wrong one. One of my best ones was Juju Smith-Schuster gets 950 yards. He had 933.
I believed in the Chiefs' defense getting it figured out by the end of the year. I feel good about that. I think I've only had perfect takes this year.
No,
sorry,
come
Sterling.
On. I also had Trey Lance as a top 10 MVP candidate. That one was a swing and a miss.
I had some bad fantasy football teams, but that was, I don't know. I that's one that I'll marinate on a little bit. I'm sorry I don't have a great one right now. I'm going to try to get to one by the end of the show.
Okay. I also had Colts winning that division, which was pretty bad. Not good.
My worst take of the year was that I thought this Pokemon game that came out a few months ago was going to be a real step technologically in the Pokemon franchise, and it was actually a step backwards.
Oh, well.
Just for a take.
Yeah, that's good. That's fine. I didn't specify. I was meaning sports and NFL in particular, but that's okay.
I don't know that I have a bad NFL take.
Yeah, sure, because you never have a hot take.
I'm sure I did.
Or you just, no, it's fine. Briscoe's never wrong. Who wins Coach of the Year this year?
I'd vote for Daboll for the reasons I mentioned earlier.
Do the Bills win by 13.5 or more, or 13.5 or less? So over under 13.5.
I'm not actually betting on that game, but I would give the points, I guess, if I absolutely had to, but I don't care for it.
Dylan, what are you doing? Because I put money on the Bills to win by basically 14 points, which feels like a lot, but also it's
Skylar
Thompson.
I like
Thompson.
Jags Chargers over, under. Hold on. Wait, sorry.
Yeah,
I got to see what I did here.
Yeah, you can basically make the line minus 20 plus for Bills.
And
Dolphins,
you rip that?
Confident. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Dylan's giving him three tutties.
Come on.
Three
let
score
me log
game.
In. Let me log in.
All right. So, Briscoe, you going for a more lumberjack look or more hipster vibe right now with your little beanie, your
just say
jean
what you
jacket?
Said when I walked in today.
You look like a Northeastern. What did I say? Northeastern
you said
hipster.
You look like a stoner lumberjack.
Stoner lumberjack.
And that's what I'm looking for.
Have you ever rocked a piss while doing a live show?
While what?
Doing a live show.
No. No, I've done some shows on the phone before. I like the Chargers-Jags under 47.5. Good luck with that, everybody.
We are
not financial
out.
Advice.